Zu Gast sind jetzt in der nächsten Stunde The Trouble Notes. Die Band spielt heute um 20.30 Uhr im Sudhaus und das Ganze wird präsentiert von der Wüstenwelle. Yeah, so guys, would you just maybe like to introduce yourself?
Sure. So my name is Bennett Servin and I play the violin in the group.
Und ich bin Flo und ich spiele Gitarre.
Ich bin Oliver Maguire, ich bin ein Percussionista.
It's so nice that you're here and that you like found the time before you're playing in the evening in Sudhaus. Ja, das ganze Interview heute wird auf Englisch, vielleicht auf Deutsch. Some of you can speak German.
A little bit.
Yeah. A little, yeah. I mean, bisschen. You can speak German, you can speak a little bit.
Yeah.
And no, we're just speak English. Okay. So, yeah, before we are talking about your current tour, which is called Lose Your Ties, which was also the song we just listened to, maybe we can just talk a little bit about your story as like, or your musician story, your musical story. When did you become a band? And I mean, each of you probably had your own musical story. I think you were like from the classic side genre.
Yeah, that's correct.
You two, I think, are not so from the classic genre.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So maybe, yeah, Bennett, maybe we just start with you.
Sure.
What was your music story?
So I started classical training from a very young age at 4. And I was in like music school program, conservatory program in Chicago, well, near to Chicago, where I studied, yeah, from 4 until 17, 18 in classic. And it was a very traditional way of studying, which I think is very important, especially for string players, because you learn a lot about the technique and music itself and theory. And then at 18, I went away to university and I moved from Chicago to New York City. And for the first maybe year and a half in university, I completely put it down and was like, I can't play anymore. It stressed me out, you know, because it was like really hardcore training that I had. And so when I was about 20 years old, I met some guys in New York who were looking for a violin player and a band. And we lived in the same building in Manhattan. And I was kind of like off cuff, like, yeah, I can actually play violin. And we played together and they liked the way that I played. And so I got back into music that way, really. And what was kind of cool was it was the first time when I realized what a creative outlet it could be for myself. And that was really nice because I always, you know, I rather than always playing someone else's music and really preparing everything, because I was competing as well. And so it was like everything was, it has to be perfect. You can't make a mistake. If you make a mistake, you know, you lose points. And so it was, you know, like everything was drilling this, you know, being hit with the perfection stick in practice for months and months and months and months and months. Technique flawless, la, 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 la. And finally, it was like I had my rebellion phase where I realized, well, I shouldn't not play at all to rebel. I should just try to do things that I was told never to do and see where that could go. And that's kind of where maybe the trouble in the name, The Trouble Notes, really mm-hmm. comes from, is, you know, this it was the desire to kind of rebel against this classical training, but yet I still very much appreciate that I did it. It's just, music became something very different for me that day in New York when I picked it back up again.
So with the guys, you like found your love to music back, you could say?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I always loved music. I listened to it a lot. I think I went through a year, those 2 years that I wasn't playing, I think I listened to more music than I had ever listened to in my entire life. Like that 18 to 19 year old age range, when I wasn't playing, I was just exploring a lot of genres that I had never listened to. And my friends in university, because I went to a completely new place, I had a completely new set of friends. And we all started to influence each other's tastes, you know, like this is what I was listening to when I was in high school, this is what I was listening to. And we all started to kind of mix genre. And I really liked that because I started to take things from the different genres. And it was like, oh man, like I really like this from hip hop, and I really like this from classic music, and I really like this from jazz. And you can hear it in our music that like we're kind of all over the place when it comes to genre. Every song has a little bit something else stuck in there, and it really comes from that desire to mix up a lot of different things, because all of us like so many different styles of music that we don't want to pigeonhole ourselves into one style.
So you don't have a specific genre. You just play what you like and what you want.
Yeah, that's a good way of saying it. I also think that, like, you know, that there's an aspect of storytelling. It's ironic because the music doesn't have words. You know, it's all instrumental, but we really try to tell stories with the music. You know, experiences that we've had or people that we've met. Or I love this analogy that, you know, like, our music is. If there's a culture here and a culture there, so let's say something, a place in the East and a place in the West, right? We want our music to be the bridge. So we want to be able to connect two cultures together that maybe people would never see as being fitting together, right? So, and the idea is, what we hope for ultimately is that you could kind of open your mind to a new culture. If you like something, like if I come to you and I say, hey, yeah, you might be from the United States, but there's elements of the Middle East in this song and you like this song, right? So if you're open to that, maybe there are other things about that culture that you would like as well. And so, you know, the idea is to kind of bridge differences and cultures and show that, you know, the world is kind of a, this universal language of music can connect a lot of different places and things.
And maybe it's also a bit easier that you don't have like a singer, so you don't have words, language in your songs. So everyone from, I don't know, from Sweden or let's say the USA or Australia, Rock they on. Can all, they understand your music, they understand the stories you're telling, because you're not telling it like with words, you're telling it with your instruments.
And it's exactly why we have always resisted, because when you first make a group, you know, in the early years of what we were doing, that was the most common thing that people would say to us is, you know, why don't you have a singer? And in all honesty, like, I actually used to sing in the project as well. And as we got more and more into the street music, singing became less and less and less important. And we kind of realized that we felt that we could travel more without singing in English or singing in Spanish or singing in French or whatever language you want to sing in. You immediately restrict your audience to people that understand that. And we realized that, you know, if you kept the lyrics out, you could go more places with the music. And what's ironic is I almost never hear that question anymore. Like when we first started, those first 2 years, like 2013, 2014, people would always ask, you know, why aren't you singing anymore? And, or why don't you have a singer? And it was like at least one or two times per week I would hear that. And now I almost never hear it. You know, where people only ask, they only ask the question of what's the reason for not having it, not you should. And I think that's like pretty cool that, like, obviously we've figured out a way for a lot of people to say, oh, you don't need it. And I like that.
You just mentioned all the traveling you're doing. But maybe before we came to this point, you two want to tell your story as like a musician, and maybe how did you all three met and became like the travel nodes?
Okay, so I grew up in London, and I have a less school kind of background or musical classical background. It was more London Underground, DJing, stuff like that, always banging on tables in school. That was pretty much my education, learning different drum patterns on the school table. So then I took that to DJing, and then became quite a successful young DJ in the London Underground scene. So I have a lot of influences of drum and bass and reggae and dance music, the dance side. And I always wanted to be actually an instrumental band, because I don't like the dictation of lyrics. You have to follow it and stuff like that, so it definitely matches the band. And I never really saw a street performer in my city, London, on my street until I met Mr. Bennett Servant next to me. And then after a week or so of jamming around and stuff, we decided to up and go. And that was a good 5 years ago now. So we've been on the move ever since. And I've always been surrounded by music. I come from a quite a musical background and stuff like that. So yeah, just rootsy.
Okay, so you two like met on the streets of London?
We actually didn't. I saw him playing on the street of London. Then we were in the same festival somehow. 1 week later, he was on the stage and I had a violin player in my band. I thought that was my violin player warming up. I was like, oh, James is here early. That's cool. It wasn't. It was the same guy I saw 1 week ago on my street. And I was like, whoa, these guys are pretty damn good. And then they had a little brief word with me after the performance. They liked what I did on a little Turkish drum, a darabuka, and offered me to just do a little tour of like open mics and stuff in London for a week, and then put the offer on the table. I was like, Ollie, we're going to Dublin. How about you come with us? And I've got family in Dublin, never been there before. So for me, it didn't really take me, no split decision at all. I was like, yeah, I'm in. Let's go for this.
So this is how the story
starts. Yeah, it's a lot longer. This is a very brief version, but it's a beautiful, very beautiful story of ups and downs and, yeah, tears and blood and everything. Yeah, it's a beautiful story.
More blood than tears, but yeah.
Blood only on the instruments, by the way. Never, never anywhere else.
Okay. So yeah.
Roughly like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
It's not so interesting. But I picked up actually the electric guitar when I was 11, so that's a few years ago now. And I had more of a metal punk background.
Or something completely different, classical background.
Yeah. And I always wanted to be a guitarist, just a guitarist, never like a front man, singer, always just a guitarist. And I was playing in loads of different like indie rock bands, but always small, never really any success. And we always dreamed about going big, and it never really worked out. And I had, like, before I met them, I had a kind of a broad taste already in music. I liked lots of different things, but when I met them, I was like, oh wait, this is something really different from what I usually listen to. And I really liked it. I saw them playing in Berlin, and then I was really annoying fanboy after that. I was following them around. I traveled with them for a little bit, recorded a few things with them, like live and like a CD. And after 1 year, I was asked to join the band. That's a really brief description. But I was probably really annoying for 1 year, and it kind of worked out.
Okay, so you just loved. Was he like the fanboy of your YouTube?
I never.
I
really
remember.
Saw it,
I remember really. A few concerts. Really. Was like, oh, Flo is here again. Say hello to Flo. I was like, oh shit.
Flo had a studio in Berlin, and when we first went to Berlin, one of our very first concerts that we played, he was there, and he, as a good engineer should do, came up to us, you know, and was like excited and wide-eyed and like, I'd love to record you guys. And we were just kind of like, okay, yeah, let's give it a shot, you know, we don't know anybody here, why not? And so that's how we first kind of met each other.
Because I thought, but then I heard about every genre in the world, and I was like, oh, this is really different from what I usually listen to. I'm also from the style of playing the guitar. I was like, wow, this is interesting. It's not just playing rock chords and rocking out on stage. It's more, there's more to it.
Okay, so this was like your band, becoming a band story. And now you mentioned that you were like singing on the streets or playing, not singing, playing on the streets. You were playing on festivals, you were playing concerts. And is this still what you're doing now? Are you still playing all the different kinds of things?
I think the order is shifting. Like, you know, when we first started, when I first left New York City, we were also playing like small concerts, but they were small bars and stuff like that. And we didn't have that many people that were coming. You know, it was mostly friends and a few people that we would pick up along the way that saw us busking. But when we left and went to London, we went knowing no one, like zero. And everything was done in the street. And so there's this kind of incredible thing where I think we owe a lot of what we've done to street music and to experiences that we've had in the street. And as time has gone on, we made a conscious decision toward the end of 2016 that we wanted to rely on the street a lot less and become more of a stage group and play more concerts and festivals. And it took a bit of time to reorder that, you know, because like I think a lot of times people, the irony is like when we said we never want to be put in a box, people, when you're a street musician, put you in a box and they think, oh, you're a street band, you're never going to be a stage band. So it took us a little bit of time to get our chances, to fight for our opportunities, and then prove that we could do it and put on a really exciting show that wasn't just, you know, bringing the street to the stage. I mean, we do a little bit, absolutely. We still bring the excitement of a good street performer to the stage, but we do it in a little bit of a different way when we're on the stage. So it's definitely a different experience than seeing us on the street. But yeah, I think now we still play in the street. I think we'll never stop. You know, I think we just do it a lot less. So, you know, it used to be like we would play in the street almost every day, and now, like if we have a 2 month tour, sometimes it's like 5 or 6 times, and it's usually just to promote a concert or something that's going on.
Trying your songs.
Yeah, yeah, that's also. I mean, because the repertoire, a lot of the songs were written in the street, and you know, I think the street has that connection that we have with the street is something that's really beautiful in a way, because you're auf Augenhöhe. Mm-hmm. So it's like you're really, in fact, yesterday we played a concert in Konstanz and the people were great, yeah? But the one thing that I didn't like, I liked everything about the club except for one thing. The stage was too high.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And okay. I felt like I was I don't like situations where you feel you're super elevated above your audience. I like to like really have like a connection with the audience. And when you're up so high, it's not as personal. It's harder to get into the... Like, it took us about half the show to really connect with people. Yeah. Where, like, people liked it from the get-go. The applause was there. The dancing was there. I was super, like, amazed by how much people danced. Mm-hmm. But it was a... Like, I could just feel for us that we felt we were too far away from people. And we wanted to be a bit closer. And we wanted to be a bit more intimately connected. Since, especially because, you know, it's not, like, 1,000 people. It was, you know, around 100. And so for us, it was like, hey, we want to really connect with these people. And you know, also when we go, like here in Tübingen, when we go somewhere for the first time, we don't have illusions of grandeur. We know that, you know, we're relatively unknown. And so for us, it's like we want to make that first connection with people. And then when we come back, the amount doubles and triples and quadruples until, you know, you're at the, you're playing the Stadion. No, I'm just joking. but you understand what I mean, yeah.
Yeah, so it's easier to like connect with people when you're playing on the streets because there is no distance. I mean, they are standing like right in front of you.
We can touch. Yeah, I mean, yeah, you can literally touch each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When permissible, yes.
Well, it happens. You can just walk up to you mid-song and try to talk to you.
And they try to touch you, the audience.
No,
they're
more awesome. No, but talking sometimes it's funny. Yeah, it's not. I'm not complaining. But sometimes you play and some maybe older people walk up to you like, oh, nice. Very nice. Ah, okay. Mid-song and then just walk off. It's beautiful.
You always, every city you get sure. somebody that, yeah. that
people try to give you the
good
money.
Fun.
Yeah. CD, they don't realize it should go in the case.
Or they just start chatting to you about stuff some like musician that you remind them of that yeah. they would really mid-song like to know well. If you know, like in the middle of the song and I'm smiling like, yeah, okay, hold on. I know who Nigel Kennedy is, but just wait. I'll talk to you after.
Or they ask you where you're from. It's like yeah. One of the best questions. Like I was playing the other day and someone's like, oh, so where are you guys from? And I'm like, okay, I just stopped playing. He's from there and he's from there.
Yeah, maybe it's because you're like not singing. So maybe they think, oh, you're playing, you just need your your hands and something. You can talk while
that
playing.
That might be it.
That's
yeah.
part of it. I think also, to be totally honest with you, I think that, you know, not to be controversial or anything like that, but I think it also has to do with a cultural respect or lack thereof of street art. And I just think that a lot of people... You know, it's not specific to Germany. It's like worldwide where, you know, a lot of there are, you can really tell the difference between cities that have a street art scene and understand what it's like and ones where we go to where there's just not a lot of street artists. And when they're there, people don't really know how to react. Like everybody comes and they're like really like, wow, what is going on? You know, I'm really excited by this. This is so different. This never happens here. Yeah. But they don't know how to interact with the person because like it's just they just don't see it very often. And so I think that, you know, sometimes people just think that, you know, like they don't respect it as a spectacle, you know, that it's not happening like in the moment and they're just like, oh, you know, you're just a guy playing your instrument on the corner and therefore like I don't see it as a start of a song and a finish of a song. It's just like a thing that's happening and I can just interrupt you in the middle of it. And, you know, I mean, it's fine. Like we don't get upset about it. We're always very like, hey, yeah, respectful. And do you mind? Let us just finish and then we'll talk, I promise. But, you know, there's been a lot that's been going on around the world of street music being kind of persecuted in some cities. And I understand, you know, because like with the invention of amplifiers, it's gotten louder and it's gotten more crazy and you can do more extravagant things on the street, you know, and take up big public spaces and make a lot of noise and annoy people. You know what I mean? You can definitely annoy people. But you know, I mean, like, us, like we have a code that we've kind of created that's like, okay, we don't go to the same spot more than once in a week. And I mean, nowadays we're rarely in the same spot more than once in a week, but like, you know, we don't go back there. We try not to play the same songs. We try not to play too loud. We try not to play for too long. And so it's always just kind of like a real quick 40 minutes and then we're gone. You know, we just want to, you know, grab some people, say, hey, look, we're going to play a concert, get a buzz going around and then we go. And, you know, I think where it becomes challenging is when you have the guy that's like on the same corner every day playing the same songs really loud. And it's like it's his house. Like, this is my spot. You know what I mean? And like when you get that, those people kind of unfortunately ruin it for everybody, because people like to paint street musicians with a very broad brush.
Okay. But you don't want to give this up, like this whole street musician thing. You want to keep this also in the future, besides playing on concerts and something.
Yeah, not so frequently, but now and again. It's nice to go back to what you used to do. And as you said, like going to a new town, nobody knows you. So maybe if you just play for half an hour on the street and you say, that was cool, but there's more. So I'll come to the concert later and check that out.
So like when people don't know you, they hear you and think, it sounds so cool.
Yeah, we have tickets in the street as well. They can buy the tickets on site. Yeah. And we have
so
this
sign.
So you
can invite at your like right at the on the street?
Yeah. Steffi here makes a sign every city we go, and she writes, tonight, heute Abend, boom, 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 and you can come along and check it out.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Also, I think it's just good fun to play sometimes in the street.
Definitely is.
Just to have the...
And you inspire people. You hear great stories, and you're at the same level as them. And if they're having a bad day, and you play a song, and it makes them, you know, touches one string of their heart. Anything could be having a terrible week, and then they're like, "Dude, thank you for your energy." And you know, so it's and you're at the same level. You're not on a stage. They can't tell you that there. You just sign an autograph after a gig and stuff. But on the street, it's very more intimate with everybody. Animals included, dogs, old women, old guys, kids, everybody.
For me, the other thing that I love about street music is, you know, when you, especially in Europe, there are so many cities in this on this continent where there are public spaces that were made acoustically for the Herald. You know, it was made for public gatherings. It was made for people to because this was before audio technique. We didn't have radio back then, you know what I mean? Like the way to reach the town was to stand in the middle and yell. And now those spaces aren't being used that way anymore. But they were designed that way, right? And so you have these gorgeous spaces with great acoustics, and we just want, I don't even know what we really want to do with them anymore. We make a market there, you know? And it's like, okay, but why can't we just, you know, like they're made for music. Like we could just every once in a while, you know, like play a bit of music in the middle of this beautiful square, and it turns into a gorgeous concert. And sometimes for us, like my favorite concert moments are more than likely from the street. Some of them, like there are performances in the street that stick in my mind more than like stages.
Okay, so now we were like talking about your experiences as street artists, and playing like concerts, you told earlier, is something completely different. How are your experiences also being on tour? I mean, you're, I think, each day in a different city, and
more or less, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So do you have the time to see something from the city, or are you just like head up, ride in the bus and drive to the next city and play your gigs?
Yeah, both. I think that there are certain cities that we take our time in, where we spend 2 or 3 days. And there are some cities where I think it's quick. You know, it's like we arrive in the morning and we're out by the next morning or even that night. Those are a shame. But you know, like for example, we played in Constance yesterday, but we arrived on Monday, and we spent 4 days in the area, you know, doing some street promotion, like we said, doing some stuff, and also just kind of enjoying that area because it's really beautiful, the lake and everything like that. You know, it's like relaxing, and sometimes you need that too. So it was nice, like those 3 or 4 days we were there, we did a lot of street music. A lot is a strong word, but we played once every day, except for the day of the concert. And yeah, like this, we got to actually see a bit of Constance and connect with some people and eat in some restaurants.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
So maybe now we can just make a little musical break, and maybe you want to play something here live in the studio.
Sure, yeah.
From your new album, or
sure
can.
Okay, sure can. Cool.
Acoustic version, of course.
Yeah. And which song do you want to play?
Let's do. Maybe we start with Bodo.
Bodo, yeah.
Yeah.
We were like talking early on that you want to tell stories with your songs, even without, I mean, using words and something, just by playing your instruments. Maybe you could tell something about the story behind this song you are playing.
This one.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, the song actually is called Boda because Boda was the imaginary friend of Kurt Cobain. And when, in this particular case, when we heard the introduction of the song from Flo, we used to joke that it was like something from a Nirvana Unplugged session. And so we took that idea and we ran with it, and we created this kind of like, I mean, when the song was first written, it has this really like this beautiful introduction, you know, and then it goes into this like garage band rock sound, you know, where you can feel really the punk rock influence in the rhythm, and the violin gets a bit dirty and screamy at some moments, and that was entirely there to kind of be like a dedication to Nirvana and that style, that kind of grungy style, but of course with still that bit of classic class and swagger. So that's that's kind of this one in particular. So this one has more of a idea of mixing genre as opposed to a very specific story.
Okay, but it's also on your new album, Lose Your Ties, isn't
correct.
It? Okay,
yeah.
And your new album, I mean, it's called after one of your songs, which we heard in the beginning,
yeah.
Lose Your Ties.
Yeah.
This song has a very specific meaning to you. And Lose Your Ties, I mean, is something you could really relate to because it was like at one of your point in your life.
Yeah, the story behind the song is, on a broad sense, that we feel that at some point in your life, in everyone's life, you have this, you undergo this really this desire to make a life altering change. And I think for most people, it's the most obvious place is in your job, for example, you know, where you feel that, but I think it can be also with your family life or your love life or whatever it might be, that at some point in your life, you have this little voice that pops into your head and tells you that you're unhappy and that you have to do something about it. And for me, that was, in fact, the career change that brought me to Europe and put me from working in an office in New York to playing on a street corner. Like, the joke was I went Wall Street to Main Street. Main Street corner, that is. I had a finance career and I was working at a hedge fund in New York City, and I had short hair. I have long hair now, as you can see. And my face was a bit cleaner shaven. And yeah, I had glasses like yours, in fact, all the time. I looked very, very like you, very intelligent. Not anymore. But back then, yeah. And so I spent a lot of time in an office working. And and music was kind of my escape, always. And in fact, street music as well. Like, there's videos you can, if you really know where to look, you can find them, where you can see me playing in a New York City subway at like 11 o'clock at night. And like, I still have, like, even though I tried to make it look a bit dirty, like, you can tell that I was wearing a suit. You know what I mean? It's just like this, the jacket was gone and it was untucked and the tie was off. Literally, I lost my tie and I tried to roll the sleeves, but like, it still looks like, you know, the man was in the office not long before. And I used to bring my violin to work, and at like 11, 12 at night, I would go into the New York City subways after like a 12 or 13 hour day and just blow off steam and play. And that was like my drug, you know what I mean? It was my escape. And at some point, I decided that I just wanted to do that full time and just see where it took me. And honestly, I think you fast forward 6 years ago, because that was in 2013 when I quit and left. And so 5 years, five and a half. And I don't think if you had told that person that I would still be doing it 5.5 years later, I think I might have said, I don't know about that. You know what I mean? Like, it morphed into something a lot more than I even thought it was going to be. Like, I just looked at it as like an adventure. I was going to travel with my music for a bit and just see what happened. And it kind of snowballed into something bigger, I think. So here I sit.
Here you all of you sit. Yeah. And not only here, you are like, in which countries you have been?
Well, most played? Of Europe, I think.
Most of Europe. And besides Europe, I mean,
North America,
North America and South America. You'd yet to been to Australia or Russia or other places like that. Mm. Like to go.
Okay, so maybe future plans.
Asia, yeah, for sure.
Asia, yeah. For sure.
And you also have like a favorite place or a favorite concert?
Or many, many favorite places.
Many
actually.
Favorite.
Oh, yeah, there's a few.
For Flo, it's wherever there's craft beer.
Really?
True. Yeah. It's not the most important thing, but it makes me really happy.
But it's nice. Okay, and what was maybe your favorite place? I love to play
in my hometown.
Okay.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Starting there and then going back there with the band, it's a very special feeling to play amongst old friends and family it's one of my favorites. It's not the favorite, mm-hmm. but definitely my hometown, London. Yeah.
And yours, maybe, Bennett?
I don't know, it's really difficult to point out one. I think mm-hmm. like there was at the end of last year we had a really special moment in Strasbourg.
It was great.
And it's because we have a really intimate connection with Strasbourg, because there was a video that was taken of us in front of a cathedral that went like really viral, and in some ways it kind of changed our lives, and as a result, like Strasbourg, because it was taken in Strasbourg, they, and Alsace in particular, they kind of like took us as like theirs, you know what I mean? It was like, this was the band that came from our region that went all the way around the world, you know what I mean? And for us, we were totally like indebted to this place, because we felt such a connection for this beautiful thing that happened to us in this moment and beyond. And so last year we went to Strasbourg a lot and to Alsace a lot, you know, to take, you know, connect with people more and more and more and more. And at the end of the year, we played a really big concert in a club called Molodoy. And it was just like, I collapsed after the show. Like I was laying like in a heap of sweat, like behind the stage, just like laying on the floor. Because for me, it was just like, we gave everything.
Yeah, and the crowd was...
And the crowd went crazy. Fantastic. And it was just like, everybody just connected together in such a beautiful way. And this year, actually, we had a few really good shows in Germany. And actually, one that I really loved was, Cologne, yeah. Of course, always, every time we play in Cologne. But no, you're never going to guess what I'm going to say. I actually really liked Neu-Ulm. We did a concert in Neu-Ulm that I was really, really, I really liked. It was in this middle of this park in like a kind of like a Waldbühne. And the setting was so perfect. The lights were great. The audience was really good. Mm-hmm. I mean, we couldn't see them, so we didn't have this connection. But like, I could feel the energy from them in a way that that was a really cool moment. Yeah. So there's a lot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, you wouldn't have never guessed that for me, but I think Paris is also really good for us. Oh, yeah. I like the whole surrounding of it. It's looking back at it now, when we stayed there for a few weeks, beautiful.
Yeah.
Sneeze.
So a lot of nice memories for you.
Yeah, and, it's really hard to pin it down.
So, yeah.
So maybe we just make a little break and play another song if you want.
Yeah.
So another live song.
Sure.
What do you want to play?
In fact, we'll play a rather new song. And this song was written, well, technically it comes from last year, but it was really put together this year. And what we tried to do is we tried to mix Celtic music with Tarantella from the south of Italy. So it's like North Europe meets South. And there's a friend of ours from Calabria who we know very well from spending a lot of time in Italy, and he would always tell me, please, please, please write a tarantella. And so I was sitting along the banks of the Danube, and I was trying to like, okay, how would I come up with a tarantella? And I had the rhythm in my head, and for some reason in this moment of, we were in Serbia actually, and for some reason in this moment, all I could think about was Irish music, like, and so it was like with this Irish melody going in my head, and the it just all came together. So yeah, this song, we call it Fiodoir, which is actually Gaelic Irish for spider, because if you know any history about the tarantella, it was a dance that was created in, well, there's debate, but you know, it comes from Taranto normally, where there is the tarantula, the big spider, is there. And there was the legend goes that if you get bitten by one of these spiders, they carry a poison. And so they created this form of dance so that you would go out at night under the moonlight, and they would play this wild, crazy music, and you would dance the poison and the craziness out of your blood. And like, what a... Mwah, delicious. So we mix these two things together, and yeah, this song is called Fiodoir.
I'm not sure if the audience can hear it out, but I'm sitting in front of you. I can see that you're not playing like a a normal violin. Maybe you could explain a bit your instrument.
Yeah, mine. Yeah, so the violin is... I mean, I have an acoustic one, of course, as well, but the one I like to play the most is actually an electric that was handmade by a guy named Jeff Stratton. And Jeff, he was from the States. He's from the USA, but he actually lives now in Bulgaria. And so the wood and everything that makes this violin comes directly from the Black Sea. And it's all handmade, everything. And there's the beauty of it. Also, the pickup that's on there, I think, is the best that you can find out there. I will always endorse Jeff, because every person that, every sound engineer that's ever played with that violin or that's had to mix it or whatever has always said that it's the best electric violin that they've ever seen.
So you prefer playing on the electric one instead of the acoustic one?
Yeah. It's not to say that I can't still play an acoustic violin. Of course I can, and I do sometimes, but like for the most part, I find this violin and the sound is so unique that it's kind of like my voice, you know? And so I like playing this violin. It just feels very personal to me. I have a special connection with this instrument as well, because it was, the maker actually gifted it to me. And so it's just like there's this special connection that I have with this instrument, and also with the maker itself, that he's become a very good friend of mine as well. And so I just feel that, you know, if I want to give my best, I always like to play that instrument, because it's like a part of me. And plus it has 5 strings as well. So there's a bratsche that's connected with the geige as well. So it's like both instruments together, which is really cool. And it's not easy to, you can find them 5 string acoustics, but like, they're not easy to find. And I miss that string sometimes when I play my 4 string classic violin, you know, and I'm like, wait a minute, something's missing. And yeah, it's that fifth side.
Florian, Oliver, do you also have some like personal story history with your instruments, or?
I don't really have any personal story. I just play in most drums that you can play with your hands, djembes, darabukas. I'm sitting on a cajon right now, which is coming from Per Cajon. They also gave me this cajon, which is a nice one, and you'll hear it in a better sound later on, mic'd up on the stage, boom, boom, boom. It's going to be fun. yeah, that's my. I play anything that involves with the hands. No sticks allowed.
Okay, I mean, you were like, before you were like playing on the table, like...
Yes.
All with the other hands.
Playing on the table and then DJing, and then also playing percussion over the DJing mix as well. Mm. Always wanted to move away from the kind of electronic side, like produce and go play live instruments. It was when I was about early 20s, I decided that.
Okay, and Florian?
As I said, I started playing electric guitar, so switching to acoustic was a bit difficult for me, maybe to find one that suits me the best. And I used to break a lot of them. maybe it's because I got better. Maybe it's because the guitar got better. I don't know. I think it's maybe the first. But the one I play right now is a Yamaha, and it's the neck is closer to an electric guitar, so that's
okay. Is that easier for you?
Not necessarily easier, but it's more, I'm more used to that and I like it. The sound is still acoustic, but the feel is more of a hybrid guitar, which I was really against at first. I was like, no, I'm going to start playing acoustic guitars. I'm going to be really straightforward with that. But no, I like this one. It's great.
And how do you like produce your songs? I mean, you are all playing different instruments. Do you like sit together and you just jam and this is how the song like becomes a song, or is one of you writing the thing for all three of
He's
you?
He's got a lot of stuff on his phone.
Okay.
Ben has a lot of
no,
ideas.
I think that I come with a starting point and then everybody kind of puts their own touch on it.
Yeah, because, it's like a factory. He makes the mix and then he sends it off to me. I try and provide the possible best beat I think that suits his melody and his riff. And then we work it from there. If somebody doesn't like something, we're like, hey, dude, maybe do that or don't do that. And then you play again in the street, and then we play sometimes rehearsals and just work on the song and build it.
The kitchen is usually the street.
Yeah.
You know what I mean by that? It's like that's where the cooking happens. So it's like normally what happens is like you come together with, you know, for example, the last song that we just played that I mentioned, you know, it was like I got the influence from my friend saying, please write a tarantella. And for some reason, the melody, like I know what the tarantella rhythm should be like, right? But then when I was sitting there and it was like, okay, I'm sitting in the Danube, and for some reason that's what came into my brain. And so it was like I came back and I was like, look, I want to write a tarantella, but this is the violin part that I want to play, and you know, but here's the rhythm of the tarantella, put something inspired by that rhythm together, and then we have something. And then like the breaks and everything like that just kind of came with cooking, you know. So it was like we had the A part from there, from that point, like I came with the A part, and then we kind of figured out B and C just kind of organically by just playing together. It was like people would try something and it was like, that works or that doesn't, or you know what I mean, like this.
Okay, so you also have ideas for like the other one and you're like cooking it together.
Yeah, sure. That's it.